This is Agriculture Today.
We are accepting almost 2.2 million acres into the Conservation Reserve Program, and that does include general continuous and grassland.
Richard Fordyce is Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA on USDA accepting 2.2 million acres into the CRP program.
The continuous CRP is more focused on a specific resource concern. The riparian buffers, field borders, those kinds of things are in the continuous CRP practice.
FSA says producers submitted offers on nearly 2.5 million acres through general grassland and continuous conservation reserve program signups. But again, program capped at 27 million acres, leaving 2.2 million available.
We keep an administrative reserve of a few acres. It's not a lot, but we're very, very close to that 27 million acre cap.
As for the top three states?
Top three this year were Nebraska, Colorado, and South Dakota. All of those states are very strong CRP states.
Again, the program helps reduce erosion, improve water quality, support wildlife habitat, and stabilize farm income. Grassland CRP also allows most grazing and haying practices to continue. North American trade numbers sending mixed signals for U.S. ag as the USMCA trade agreement faces renewed attention. Canada posting record exports in May, helped in part by farm and food products and stronger sulfur shipments. Matters because sulfur tied to phosphate fertilizer production can affect crop input cost. Mexico, though, may be the bigger farm story. USDA's Economic Research Service says Mexico, the largest U.S. ag trading partner in 2025, with combined ag exports and imports totaling $74.5 billion. The broader trade picture, though, less favorable. Census data shows U.S. goods deficit with Mexico, $21.1 billion in May, while the overall U.S. trade deficit widened to $77.6 billion. But for ag, the relationship remains complementary. U.S. exports grains, oilseeds, meat, dairy, and related products to Mexico. Mexico sends vegetables, fruit, beverages, and other food products to the U.S. But farmer sentiment weakened again in June as high input costs remain the top concern for producers. Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer fell to 113 in June, down from 119 a month earlier. Dr. Michael Langemeyer, director of Purdue's Center for Commercial Ag, says both current conditions and future expectations declined. Input costs dominated the survey. 47% of farmers listed high input cost as their biggest concern. U.S. ethanol and dry distillers grains exports, or DDGs, improved in May, giving corn demand another supportive signal. U.S. ethanol exports totaling 189.7 million gallons. That was 11% higher than April. Canada remains the top destination, hitting a six-month high at 76.3 million gallons. European Union followed at 39.1, led by Netherlands. Canada and the European Union accounted for over 60% of total ethanol exports in the month of May. Nigeria, Colombia, Vietnam, and the Philippines also active buyers. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
For farmers who typically purchase inputs during late summer or early fall, timing this year could be challenging as market prices adjust downward in the months ahead.
That's Mark Rosenbaum, Terrain's Senior Grain and Oilseed Analyst, on nitrogen prices.
Wholesale market prices for urea have fallen recently and are currently down about 50% from their peak in early April. These lower prices are expected to continue through fall, though retail price adjustments to these lower prices have taken time historically. Lower prices for nitrogen are not without risk. A re-escalation of the conflict between the U.S. and Iran could push prices higher. These are risks not only for urea, but diesel too. Markets currently price an average monthly decline of about 3 cents per month, with farm diesel forecast to approach $3.50 per gallon near the end of the year. Phosphate production costs remain elevated, leading to announced production cuts as key inputs to the manufacturing process remain at elevated price levels. Prices for phosphate fertilizers look to remain elevated at least through fall, with some decline possible. These declines will likely be tied to either lower sulfur, sulfuric acid, or ammonia prices. Though less likely, more significant price declines would require a noticeable increase in supplies, either from larger Chinese exports or another major producer. I forecast U.S. average retail MAP prices to average about $9.25 per ton and DAP prices to average about $8.50 per ton in the fourth quarter. Nitrogen prices are expected to see the largest price declines this fall, though retail cash prices for urea and UAN may stay elevated through summer before resetting lower towards fall. I forecast U.S. average retail anhydrous prices to average about $850 per ton, urea prices to average about $570 per ton, UAN 28 to average about $370 per ton, and UAN 32 to average about $425 per ton in the fourth quarter. Potash prices have been unaffected directly by the Iran war, though higher transportation costs have likely contributed to some of the slight increase seen since the war started. I forecast U.S. average retail potash prices to decline slightly to average $485 per ton this fall.
But can we project into next year? Could there be lower operating costs in 2027?
The timing of the Iran war this year has led to a wide range of average operating cost structures in the U.S., with a notable divergence between those buying fertilizer and fuel before the Iran war began in March and those buying those inputs after. For example, two average corn farms could have operating costs that differ by at least $25 per acre and possibly much more due to purchase timing. I forecast corn operating costs to average $457 per acre for the current crop. Lower forecast prices for fertilizer and energy items could save farmers about $11 per acre on average in 2027. However, forecast higher spending on custom services and repairs offset a portion of this decline for a net $7 per acre reduction in operating costs in 2027. For soybeans, I forecast operating costs to average $263 per acre for the current crop before falling about $3 per acre to $260 per acre for 2027. Unlike corn, soybeans are not expected to see as much benefit from lower fertilizer prices. However, lower energy prices are expected to drive savings on fuel costs and potentially chemical costs. These savings on fertilizer, chemicals, and fuel will likely be partially offset by higher repair costs. For those who purchase inputs earlier, negotiations or close attention to competing prices may be important this year to make sure the drop in wholesale prices for nitrogen and fuel is reflected in your retail quotes. Cash retail prices tend to lag wholesale prices, so communication with your input supplier may be important to secure favorable prices in late summer or early fall. Farm diesel prices are likely to continue falling towards harvest if the Iran deal holds and production and trade in crude oil return to more normal patterns.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
And we think about where we're at. Normally we kind of reach a seasonal high sometime in the summer, but then last year we had kind of a double peak in August. But important to note that that's not likely to happen this year. And the reason why is because that peak was really driven by, you know, Brazilian demand being kind of cut out of the market.
Elliot Dennis is a livestock economist with the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
We increased tariffs prohibitively on them. And at the time we had the New World screwworm, thought we had it under control. And so we kind of opened up the borders again, and then we closed it in August. And so that kind of spiked prices again. That's unlikely to kind of happen this year. And so those were really kind of policy shocks that drove the market higher, not necessarily underlying fundamentals of the market. It will be interesting to see kind of what we do kind of with the border and how we kind of manage New World screwworm. It's continued to kind of move throughout the United States. The USDA has really gotten ahead of this and had some great maps on just their Animal Plant Health Inspection Services, APHIS website. And, you know, it's moving. You know, it's moving even northward into Texas and in, you know, has progressed from, you know, the bottom of Texas into the middle of Texas. So it's moving, then it's on the move. And so how that ultimately affects and spreads into the market. But are we betting on a supply shock? You know, are we culling of animals to move prices higher? Or are we focusing kind of on beef demand, which I think we should be focusing on the latter when we're thinking about, you know, prices and setting risk management decisions.
He says New World screwworm has really changed supply, as well as imports and exports.
Prices have just been risen so much in the United States. You know, that's really made it, you know, cost prohibitive for a lot of people to, you know, to export a lot of volume. The volume's down quite a bit, but, you know, total value was up because just such high prices. So what that basically says is a lot of that volume that might have left, you know, is staying domestically in the market. So just kind of combining all of those together, you know, really puts a supply drag. And is, I think, one of the reasons why we're starting to see a little bit of weakening on the market.
Dave Weber is senior animal protein analyst with Terrain. Does this mean we could see sustained herd expansion?
Hopes of increasing the U.S. cattle herd are on hold again. My analysis of recent pasture and range condition data shows that more than 3/4 of the beef cow herd are under drought conditions. Pacific sea surface temperatures have warmed into El Nino territory, and there are now better than 2/3 odds that it will be a strong or very strong event. Beef cow slaughter levels remain below year earlier levels, even as drought-induced culling is taking place on many operations. Auction market data in the Northern Plains show increasing numbers of very light calves being sold off ranches, likely the results of early winning programs or splitting cow-calf pairs upon their arrival at the auction market. Many of these cows were likely headed for slaughter. Adding to the feeder cattle and calf supply deficit, New World screwworm has entered the United States via the Texas-Mexico border, making it harder for surrounding farms and ranches to move cattle further north. The New World screwworm confirmation also appears to have put the reopening of the U.S.-Mexico border to live cattle trade on hold. For now, it appears that drought conditions and heifers leaving ranches due to limited feed availability are the only potential for an increase in available feeder cattle and calf supplies for the foreseeable future. These are not avenues for sustained herd expansion.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
I believe that a large part of this price decline comes from the expectations of a recovery in global supply, and this is mainly driven by Brazil.
Leonardo Rossetti is a market analyst for StoneX in Brazil, talking coffee.
There is a strong view that we will have a global surplus this year. As you mentioned, Brazil should have a record crop. During the first months of this year, we've seen many estimates being revised upward. At StoneX, for example, we increased our first estimate from 70.7 million bags to 75.3 million bags. This was mainly driven by Arabica production, which is expected to grow 37%, reaching 50.2 million bags. This would be a new all-time record. For Robusta, we expect 25.1 million bags. It's slightly lower than last year, but it's still a strong number. And in addition, we are also seeing recovery in other key producers, especially Vietnam and Indonesia. Vietnam is the largest Robusta producer, is already showing improvement. If we look at the exports from Vietnam since October, which is the start of the season, they have increased 16% compared to last season. And when we put all this together, the market expects a global surplus. At StoneX, we estimate a surplus of around 10 million bags, which would be the biggest surplus since 2020. Mm-hmm. And this surplus should become more clearer in the second half of the year when Brazilian supply increases. And that's what has been putting pressure on prices throughout the most part of 2026.
Moving from markets to physical product.
Yeah, what became very clear in these recent weeks mm-hmm. is this mismatch between expectations of large supply and the short-term reality in the physical market.
Right.
On one side, we have these expectations of a much bigger crop this year, but in the short term, the physical market, it's still very tight. There are a few reasons for that. First, in Vietnam, even with a better crop, we see reports that farmers are holding back sales and waiting for better prices. Second, in Brazil, the harvest is delayed mainly because of weather. We had more rain than usual this last month, especially in Arabica regions, and that delayed both harvest and post-harvest activities like drying and processing the coffee beans so it's in proper condition for sale. And third point here is that Brazilian producers, they are financially stronger this year. They sold coffee at a very high prices last year. So now part of them don't have this urgency to sell and can wait for better opportunities. So when you combine a delayed harvest with slower selling, supply remains tight in the short term. And in addition, stocks are very low in several consuming regions. We see these in Europe, in Japan, and also in ICE-certified stocks. And we believe that U.S. inventories are relatively low as well. So basically, all these factors help support prices in the short term. This is what we saw, especially during June of this year.
What's ahead for the rest of the year?
Even if farmers continue to sell slowly this year, I think the volume may be too large to keep holding back, and this could bring some relief to the market, especially to importing countries, and some more downward pressure on prices.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
On May 20th, the ongoing labor dispute at Cargill's Fort Morgan, Colorado beef plant escalated with the company locking out its nearly 1,700 union employees.
Dave Weber is senior animal protein analyst with Terrain, talking about packer capacity, consumer demands, and prices.
The company and union representatives had been in tense negotiations to renew their expired contract. The talks culminated in a 90% union rejection of a 5-year contract offer. Because the plant, which can process up to 4,700 head per day, had not slaughtered cattle since the third week of April, the futures market reaction to the lockout news was limited. By mid-June, front-month live cattle futures prices had rallied above prices that existed on the day of the announcement. Cattle feeders still have the upper hand, albeit less so when it comes to leverage in the marketplace. Packer slaughter capacity still outpaces cattle availability by 6,000 to 8,000 head per day. Packer margins remain negative, ranging from minus $200 to minus $300 per head. I don't expect them to improve during the summer, and they may worsen if beef prices falter. Average cattle carcass weights reached their lowest levels of 2026 to date during the last week of May, but were still 31 pounds per head above last year. Following a similar pattern, the percentage of cattle slaughtered that graded choice or prime has declined week over week since late April. Combined, these trends are both following a normal seasonal pattern and hint that cattle feeders have gotten slightly more current in their marketings of finished cattle. The market missed the fact that the reported May slaughter rate was nearly 5% larger than the pace from January to April, down 8.6% year over year. Beef demand and consumer spending remain resilient, despite consumer sentiment measures for the whole economy waning due to rising fuel costs and rising inflation, dashing the odds of an interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve. The Fed chose to keep overnight interest rates steady at its mid-June meeting. According to 201 Analytics and Circana Retail Grocery Scanner Data Analysis, May beef sales volume declined 1.4% compared with a year earlier, and sales dollars declined for the first time in many months. This isn't to say that demand declined. We'll have to wait for the May trade data to be sure, as retail prices were still 13% above year prior. Likely, the worst thing you can say about demand is that the rate of growth slowed, but remained positive. I expect cattle slaughter in Q3 2026 to run 2% to 4% below year earlier levels, and beef production in Q4 2026 to run 3 to 5% below 2025 levels. The average increase in fed cattle dressed weights will likely offset 3 to 3.5% of the slaughter decline. In this scenario, continued record high imports could cause net beef supplies and per capita consumption to increase about 1% for the last two quarters of 2026. Rising retail prices during the summer will equate to continued robust beef demand. I expect fed cattle prices to average $252 to $258 per hundredweight, with a range of $245 per hundredweight to $262 per hundredweight in Q3 and close to $255 per hundredweight in Q4. This will likely lead to break-even to slight profits for cattle marketed during Q3 and similar size losses during Q4. Feeder cattle prices will likely break out of their near sideways trade they have been in since May and June and rally from $370 per hundredweight in early July to nearly $410 in late September, averaging $385 to $390 per hundredweight for Q3 and $395 to $405 per hundredweight for Q4. I expect Oklahoma City 450-pound steer calves to be in mostly rally mode through Q3. With prices rising from near $500 per hundredweight early on to $555 per hundredweight by late Q3. In Q4, I project they'll range from $540 per hundredweight to $560 per hundredweight.
It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
History has a way of repeating itself, and it seems like we never learn.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX. Talks about a recent USDA announcement.
If everybody listening remembers, back in, I think it was 2022, then-Secretary Vilsack announced a $250 million package that he rolled out during Commodity Classic. And that was largely, I hate to say it this way, but largely laughed at. That was later doubled to $500 million. So it was very, very similar to this package that Secretary Rollins just rolled out. Well, the $500 million package back then in 2022 obviously did nothing to help us during this last run-up of prices that we saw. So it's hard to look at back in 2022, see the very little amount that it helped, and then see the same program that mirrors it very, very closely and think this is going to make a big difference. This one's going to be different. Now, in terms of the details of it, it's a total of $500 million. The range awards are anywhere from $15 million to $150 million. And don't get me wrong, those are massive amounts of money. And to you and I, that would be life-changing. That would be generational thinking or changing. But when it comes to the fertilizer market, it's not very much money. So if you apply for the package and you get approved, you have to show that you can match that amount. If you ask for $15 million, you have to show that you're putting in at least $15 million yourself. The applications are due before August 16th. of 2026. And what they're trying to focus on are things that are already ready to go, not brand new things where they got to get through all the engineering and everything like that. It's shovel ready. That's what they want. Shovel ready, independent, secure manufacturing projects. This is all the things that she had said in her statement. So again, we appreciate the attention. And it's not to sit there and say that $500 million is not a big amount of money. It absolutely is. But when you think about the single biggest need for North America, for the U.S., it's urea production. We import over 5 million tons, so we need to build more nitrogen production. Those production plants are going to cost nearly $5 billion. If they gave all $500 million of this to one company with the intent of building a new nitrogen production facility, it wouldn't be enough of an initial down payment to get the project going. So that's kind of the disappointment, kind of the struggle with it. It's like, it's great. We appreciate the attention. We appreciate the investment. Just falls a little short of what we need to really get this thing fixed for the next generation of farmers.
Speaking of announcements, Elliot Dennis, livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
The big announcement, Secretary Rollins announced what they were calling the FER program, which was strengthening processing for U.S. ranchers. And it's really just to provide temporary support for eligible beef processors. When you think about it, it's really about thinking it'd be small to medium size meat processors. And really they're thinking about kind of strengthening the supply chain. So they really committed a pretty sizable amount. They're saying they're going to provide up to $500 million in payments to eligible entities. And really what they're looking at is for market stabilization. So packers are losing anywhere between that, you know, $200 to $250 a head that every time they're processing. Some of the worry we had a couple weeks ago, a JBS plant shut down in Pennsylvania. And so, you know, if they continue to lose value, they can only do that for so long. And so how do we continue to kind of support this industry and provide, you know, a market where, you know, ranchers and feedlots can actually deliver their product to? And so a lot of that has to do with that. And then it's really just kind of beefing up this product, the USA label program that USDA has really started to promote kind of earlier. So that, in addition to other grants where you can actually build out and apply for grant opportunities, are all things if you're working with smaller medium processors to let them be aware of.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.